Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. So this was a wonderful adventure you're asking me about doing an urban retreat. And I appreciate the opportunity to do this with you. It seems to me that the real issue with an urban retreat is how to maintain the focus of the not so urban while maintaining the ability to move with compassion in the world. And I don't know about you, but it's really easy to lose that perspective. I remember reading one time, you know, I like words. Some of you might, this surprises you, I'm sure. The word cloud and the word clod, they're exactly the same word. Did you know that? Yeah, clod and cloud, they mean the same thing. They come from the same origin. They're originally... But I figure in my perspective, if you just let a little you creep into it, then everything moves a little better. You know? That's my personal decision on why they're not the same word after all. Get off the air, get off the ground a little bit, and better view, maybe. And so in order to maintain the view while still, you know, while still maintaining the clodness, that's an issue, isn't it? How does one do that? Some of you have the description of the eight worldly dharmas that's at the back of the Precious Human Birth. Have some of you read that? And it talks there about, you know, according to the Buddha, we are born with, which is actually according to Hindu tradition, we're born with four demons riding on our shoulders. That's good news, isn't it? That's the good news. Yes. And they are eating, sleep, sex, and breath. And they're with you as long as you're alive. There's no way you can get rid of them, get away from them in any way. You can prefer to block out one with the other. We have all our little tricks, don't we? But they remain eating, sleeping, sex, and breath. And they are basically, though, the propensities that arise as soon as consciousness inhabits matter. Consciousness, in order to manifest, has to, kind of like a rainbow, you know, a rainbow is different colors. It's one light, but when you pass it through a prism. So when consciousness, which is why rainbows are... Well, I don't go there. So when consciousness passes through the prism of material, different aspects of consciousness go at a different rate of vibration. So that part of consciousness that's going to be responsible for maintaining the physical form is involved also with eating. It's also involved with pride. It's also involved with wanting to accumulate stuff, you know, gluttony, miserliness. It's also involved with earth. It's also involved with loving kindness. And I thought it might be useful for us to look at that one for tomorrow, today and tomorrow. Does that suit you?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll tell you that unless you know how to handle the earth element, which is also involved with it's the conscious attribute that links with earth, is called feeling, like and dislike, as a consciousness that works with her. And until there is some ability to not only experience like and dislike within your own personal being, but also know that that's personal, know it's based on conditions, and have a sense of what else you could see it as, you're not going to see anything clearly. We're always swayed by our preferences until we realize the preferences. You don't have choice if you always choose the same thing. It's one of the reasons why it's so wonderful to be able to switch countries, to live in another country. Because, boy, don't your preferences just hit you in the nose? Yeah. Every day. I totally remember how wrong the Japanese were the first day I was there, and I was presented with soup and pickles for breakfast. Excuse me, that's not breakfast. And there are like billions and billions and billions of little moments every day where that tattoo of like and dislike is going on. Billions and billions of them. Where we get blinded by preference based because we've already done it in the past. We're just going to accumulate more of the same. We're going to be miserly. I'm going to repeat it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
So it's not awareness. It's not a choice. And it's not liberation. I'm sorry. If you have the choice, and you're aware of the choice, and you decide to go with your preference, that's a totally different thing. You go with your preference knowing that that preference is not going to bring you satisfaction. That anything that you accumulate is still subject to loss. And it's fraught with dissatisfactoriness. The three marks are there in it. The three marks are there. You know what the three marks are? Anicca, which means impermanence. Dukkha, which means dissatisfactoriness. Anatta means no inherent identity. According to the Buddha, there were three, four, or five absolutely unmistakable signs. And the usually quoted are the three or the four, and the three are anicca, impermanence, dukkha, dissatisfactory, and anatta, no inherent self. And when there's four, then nibbana is added to that. So nibbana actually means peaceful. Peacefulness. And it is not, and these are the unchanging or the laws, these are actually laws. Whatever arises in the material world is impermanent. That's straightforward, we all know that, don't we? Except we don't know it, do we? We prefer not to know it, don't we? Have you had any of you ever bought anything new? Mm-hmm. Does that say something new and a little more expensive than you would usually buy something new? Any of you ever done that? And the first blemish on it?
What a relief.
Yeah. Good. But not always, is it? No. Because we forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody uses it before you get a chance to? Any of those? Mm-hmm. Subject to dissatisfactoriness for many reasons. So nibbana, being peaceful, means the going out of being caught by preference. You could probably summarize most of the teaching into the basis, the bottom line for any state of peacefulness is to be able to understand preference. One goes over it again and again and again. If you cannot handle preference, if you cannot see through preference, when you get into in meditation, what I was talking to you about the three levels of experience, first one being the impure experience, which is also the experience of linear time, which is also the experience of the material world. It's impure because the feeling is of separateness. It's also called awake, relating to awake, mm-hmm. And it is also the type of light that's used to describe it is reflective. Awe indicating something to do with time, too, if you. So it is the resultant. This world is the resultant world. The other next level of experience is called perception or of being is a vision of experience. Vision is a vision of experience. It's I've referred to as dream, the reality of dream. Mm-hmm. It is all the mystical experiences arise there, all the great depth feelings arise there. It's radiating light. It's also madness arises there. And the last third level is called the pure vision, which is usual in Buddhism, is described by saying it's indescribable. It's sleep. So wake, dream, and sleep. Those are the analogies that are used for the three types of vision. The problem is that if you haven't done enough groundwork with preference, you get very easily trapped by emotion. Very easily. And when emotion becomes very powerful, like in mystical experiences or when your wheels spin on linear reality, you don't really have that checking of, you know, the usual way that people view reality, you know, the day-to-day who's going to pay the taxes kind of view isn't really strong for you. The vision of experience can lead you anywhere, usually at first very high, and then it starts getting, oh, I'm not so high, kind of health state. And because there are no guidelines in it, you know, it's cause, not effect. It's causal, it's motive. It's not source, but it's motive. It's radiating. It's creating form. The wonderful thing about this form world is that you can see what you've already done. So if you don't like the way the world is reacting towards you, you could say, okay, well, how do I want to change how I'm behaving toward the world? But with the vision of experience, it is creating, so you don't want to tell it happens. See, there aren't the guideposts of the linear realm. Does that make sense to you? Am I actually making sense here, everybody? Sorry. Any questions? Want to go back over any of it?
Can you keep going?
Oh, yeah. Is the Pope Catholic? Who dares shit in the woods? Let me see. What is the answer to these questions? So the vision of experience can be very dangerous. Yeah, we all, because we all yearn for some great meaning, don't we? Some true insight into, you know. And if it comes and we haven't worked with preference, we're going to get hooked. And we're going to get hooked in a realm where there are no guideposts. And do you think anybody's going to be able to convince us? Of course, we won't ask anybody who might actually convince us, because we'd be clinging to our visions so desperately, won't we? You bet your sweet bippy we will. You bet. So you hear about people who go mad in meditation, it's right there. Because when you're doing practice, one of the things you do is you loosen your grip on your identity in the impure vision, which allows the vision of experience to have more power in your life. But unless you have a way to maintain your kind of focus point, that's not necessarily such a good thing. Unless you want it to belong to a Kool-Aid cult or something like that. I mean, want to hit the newspapers, but your religious practices look good in the tabloids. But I don't think that's a skillful way to use religion. In my mind, that's not skillful. In my mind, we really need in our world more and more visionaries who are able to focus in day-to-day existence with compassion, because they are using the vision of experience as a channel from the source, not using it to make themselves separate from the ordinary world. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. So this is a responsibility. And I'll tell you, there is nothing more important to meet this responsibility than knowing how to work with preference, with feelings. We start with just the five feelings. Five feelings are, you know, physical, like and dislike, mental, what do I call it? Satisfaction, dissatisfaction, and neutral. Those are the five feelings. You start with those. That's enough to start with. When you get good at those so that you can actually see them arising most of the time in your day, and you can remember that quote, I'll do it again, because this is what I think we should really be focusing on from the Buddha. It is good to abide from time to time in perceiving the non-beautiful in the beautiful. To abide from time to time in perceiving the beautiful in the non-beautiful. For what reason to see the non-beautiful in the beautiful? So that no lust arises in me. That beautiful. For what reason to see the beautiful in the non-beautiful? So that no hate arises. For what reason should one overcome the beautiful and the non-beautiful? You ride them, don't have them ride you, you know, overcome. So that one remains mindful with clear comprehension and equanimity. cannot remain mindful with clear comprehension and equanimity if you have not learned how to make choices about the beautiful and the unbeautiful. And that's a discipline. That's a discipline. Now, I wanted to just read you from Joseph Campbell, the mythic image, this beautiful little mythic image, page 313, in case you care. This is not the book. Because you see, what the consciousness does, what mind does, whether it's a quality of mind, what the mind that is the consort of knowing, what that does is it reflects everything. So what you want to be able to do is know whether the reflection is inner truth or outer truth. And if you haven't learned enough about how to balance preference, you're not going to know. So I really like this. This is the first aphorism of Patanjali's classic handbook of yoga supplies the key to the entire work, says Joseph. And then he has it translated as, yoga consists in the intentional stopping of the spontaneous activity of the mind stuff. Something like Nirodha Vritti Chitta. Nirodha Vritti Chitta.
Okay. Yoga Chitta.
Yoga. Ah, Yoga Chitta Nirodha. Vritti means what?
Vritti means. It can be translated in many ways. Changes, fluctuations, vibrations.
So it would be the cessation of the vibrations of Chitta. Yeah. That's the one I was. Yeah. The idea is that within the gross gray matter of the brain, there is an active, subtle substance that is continually changing form. Not the actual brain, but there is an energy quality, subtle substance. Responsive to sound, touch, sight, taste, and smell. This fluid, innermost substance of the nerves takes on the shapes of all the sense impressions, which is indeed how and why we experience them. And he does that thing that I love so much, moving the eyes quickly. Do it. One can observe the speed with which this sensitive matter, because your eyes are seeing everything, mm-hmm. but that's not what's reflecting from your brain, is it? Mm-hmm. Some things you see, other things you just dismiss. One can observe the speed with which this sensitive matter assumes forms and dismisses them. Mm-hmm. There is a difficulty, however, in that its movement never ceases. The untrained mind will not stand still. And yoga is the intentional stopping of its movement. The mind is likened to the surface of a pond rippled by a wind. The idea of yoga is to cause the wind to subside and let the waters return to rest. When a wind blows and waters stir, the waves break, and distort both the light and its reflections, so that all that can be seen are colliding, broken forms. Not until the waters will have been stilled, cleansed of stirred up sediment, and made mirror bright will the one reflected image appear. Isn't that nice? So all the preferences are winds. Mm-hmm. They're winds. Mm-hmm. And most of them are habitual. You're the one who's blowing them. So in order to actually begin to perceive that, have that clarity of that reflected image come to you, and have it be trustworthy, first is the work of loving kindness, or kindness, where if there is a tendency to be overly fond, it can be balanced. And there is a tendency to be overly unfond, it can be balanced. Do you have any questions? Answers, comments, complaints? Is this interesting to you?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a comment?
No, I was just thinking about these winds' preferences. It always seems to me often that these are grooves that can't be reshaped.
It seems like that, doesn't it? So it'd be fun to see whether we can. So this is an exercise for you tomorrow, at work or whatever. Find a very small little pebble and put it in one of your shoes. And practice being grateful that you have it to remind you to not become habitual. You don't have to stomp on it or anything. Not a big one, not a thumbtack. And to have a sense, whenever it just gets between your toes or something like that, just think, oh good, I'm just right here, I can feel that. Mm-hmm. And just think, this feeling is reminding me to be present in my life.
Right.
This feeling is reminding me to be present in my life. Don't let anybody catch you doing that. You have a hard time explaining.
Why are you putting that pebble on your shoe?
To match the other one and the other. I was walking.
What if you wear sandals and it falls out?
Oh, well, you know, I don't know. Put a little piece of scotch tape in there or something. I'm sure you work something out.
Just look for the whole day.
It's up to you. It's your choice. Okay. And you watch your preference with your choice.
Right.
And isn't it interesting how much we would like to avoid discomfort? Mm-hmm. The thought of discomfort, not the experience.
Right. Well, I just think of how quickly, yeah, I want to shake a couple of shoes generally.
Yeah. But not by trying it in this moment, you understand?
That's right. Like, oh yeah. No.
So that's like a wind from that is a habit that you're blowing again.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
So that doesn't allow one to just explore it. So this is such an obvious one. Can you imagine how many moments there are during the day where you make little preferences,
mm-hmm,
without paying attention? At various times I've decided that I'm getting too busy in my life, like being caught by the eight worldly dharmas, running and running, trying, always trying to be, always caught in becoming the next moment. So I do things like I try to eat with my left hand because I'm right-handed. Do things that are non-habitual that actually cause you to be present. And Gurdjieff have said, never walk the same way twice. So it's, you know, there's lots of ways not to walk the same way, even if you're walking on the street that you always walk on. It's very creative, thinking ways not to walk the same way. And you'd be surprised how much more joy that gives you in your life if you're not trying to get somewhere, but you're where you are. How much more richness there is. We start running, don't we? And there isn't ever just giving yourself the moment. So where are you going to be? What, you know, what if the Buddha knocks on the back door and walks in? You're not home because you're out of the front door. You should practice every once in a while being present just in case he drops by. You know? All that meditation you've done, he might actually come. But you're not there. Oh, damn. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints to the moment? There are a lot of different ways to do that loving kindness practice. What I am recommending to you, first of all, is that you, several times tomorrow during the day, you watch your preferences. You watch when you're bored with the meeting or when you feel any sense of wanting to withdraw a little bit from something, and practice just balancing yourself in the moment. It's where the pebble in the shoe will come in really handy. So you tromp on that pebble just a little bit. Remind yourself of where you are. And say to yourself, at this moment, I could die. This moment I could die. Is this the state of mind I wish to be in when I die? And if it's not, change the sucker. Your mind. So those are the two things I want you to do. You have a pebble in your shoe. And then tomorrow, several times during the day, I want you to just think, at this moment, what is the mind state? What is the feeling? If it's too much wanting something, at this moment, I could die. You know, when you want to get somewhere, or you want something to be satisfactory, or you're looking forward to something also, are you present? So that you can have all those same emotions, but there is one deeper part of yourself that does not lose balance. If you don't train yourself to have your compass hooked up to a center point, when the winds really blow, you're lost. And in the vision of experience, which you also experience when you die, it's easy to get lost. The dream. In the dream, it's easy to get lost. Yes, ma'am.
Did you just say you can still have these certain kinds of emotions?
Yeah, preferences, yeah, absolutely.
So, can you speak on that? I mean, since we were just talking about not having...
Or not watching, being caught by
them. Not being caught,
not being caught by them, not being unaware. First of all, not being unaware, so which is why the pebble.
Okay.
Then using that tool for awareness for when you're in a state where you're caught. So that you're training yourself to not be caught by those states. They'll still arise, but there is an inner part of yourself that's watching it and choosing how to balance it. Mm-hmm. Or saying, oh, what the hell? I've been good today. How about I get drunk? And then the next day you say, did I have a good time? Because you know, who knows? Is that answering your question, or do you want to take another run at it?
It's more information, but maybe my question isn't clear. Being aware and still, on a very subtle level, aware of the preference is not necessarily blindly letting it lead you, but it's still a preference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so is it still not, also still got a caughtness to it?
No.
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 Aware?
No. No, it does not.
Okay.
So long as there's form, there's preference.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to get my oxygen from the air. Fish prefer to get theirs from the water.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to say, well, now that I have balanced preference, I'm going to start breathing underwater. Although I imagine that there might be beings who could do that, but I am not one.
It's not a different level of that kind of preference than what I was thinking about.
Are you sure? Okay, give me an example.
Well, that's more of a physiological preference. I'm not sure I have a choice of where I want to get my oxygen.
Okay.
As part of a body.
Right. And are you sure where you get your choice, your preferences?
Pattern.
And where do patterns arise? And is the body a pattern?
Many.
Yeah. Patterns within patterns.
Patterns. So even with awareness of and watching the stream of pattern on pattern on pattern, and seeing it arise, and therefore having more awareness than I did the time before as a result of practice.
Yeah.
It's really a point. Well, no, that's not the question. I was going to say freedom,
yeah.
But...
Yes, that is your question, and thank you. That's a beautiful question. And you want to know, most people have that question, because for most people, the yearning in the mystical life is to be free of patterns. In Buddhism, it's called nihilism.
Mm.
I just want everything to go out.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to you, one of the problems when you start having experiences and you feel like you have some ability, say, to get to a state that is very much without preference, without anything, a boundless state of blissfulness. Seems like a pretty good place to build your cabin. Okay, I'm here. One eon goes by, because what's an eon in a place like that? Two, we are very peaceful. No patterns. Three eons go by. There's a little shift in the planetary influences. Some asshole moves next door. Their chainsaw. Credit card doesn't move in the way. Oh my God, the credit card's expired. Oh, I have to run out more karma to get more credit. The whole thing was a trick. The whole thing was a trick. It was a lie. It's just not fair. I spent lifetimes getting to this place, Because I thought, I read the advertisement, I saw on that advertisement, this was forever. And that meant eternal. 3E.
Yeah, because the point that we're getting to with it is that sense of how much of yourself actually is because of that person. Mm-hmm. And the real wish to repay that somehow, to give back an equal gift or a better gift or something. Like that's really what loving kindness hinges on, the practice of it. And why it's so powerful is because it is the number one antidote to being caught by the worldly darkness. Mm-hmm. You know, we will do for others what we will never do for ourselves. We will be greedy, but if somebody else is starving in front of us, then there will be a real desire to feed them. And we feel better from doing. We are happier when we're kind. We don't feel happy when we aren't kind. We might feel like at least we're safe, but there's a little bit of a question of safe for what, safe from what. But kindness itself is a joy. So that's where this meditation really is taking you in terms of by watching preferences and by practicing this just a little bit we did tonight, and if you read it again tomorrow. And with the pebble in the shoe, I think you might find that quite enough to begin to break down preference. It seemed like that to me when I played with it, setting this up. Is that it for questions, answers, comments, or complaints? So you notice this extremely beautiful gold light. It just moves through your body, pours out your force in all directions, above, below, front, behind, right, left, forward. Moves out from this room, just spreads through the neighborhood. Right through the whole province, right through the whole shooting out into space. So wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, just temporarily is washed, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been accepted by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. So there is a sign. Thank you for your great compassion.